Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read Entertainment Weekly from their website, which is EW.com. This week I'm recording just a tad early, and I don't have our must list yet, and you know how much I love to start there, but I do have some other lists. It's getting into different seasons, so I'm focusing on Christmas season and also Oscar season. Can you believe it? So here we go. First up is my Christmas list. These are the 15 coziest Christmas movies to stream this holiday season and where to watch them. The list spans 84 years of festive favorites and hidden gems. This is by Randall Colburn. Christmas is as much about memories and tradition as it is celebration and gift-giving. It's a holiday that brings its own stresses, but it's also important to carve out some time for the season's cozier pleasures, a heavy blanket, a hot cup of cocoa, and a movie that reminds you of simpler times. Entertainment Weekly's assembled 15 movies that deliver the cozy factor, from vintage soul warmers like It's a Wonderful Life to stop-motion Rankin-Bass classics to more recent additions to the Christmas canon like The Holdovers and Christmas Eve in Miller's Point. Light a candle, roast some chestnuts, and scroll down for Entertainment Weekly's favorite cozy Christmas movies. The first one is The Shop Around the Corner from 1940. These days, Ernst Lubitsch's The Shop Around the Corner is mostly remembered as the inspiration for You've Got Mail, the maddening Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan rom-com that's become something of a Christmas classic in its own right. Both movies follow ostensible rivals who don't realize they're also communicating as anonymous pen pals. You've Got Mail sparkles thanks to Hanks and Ryan's chemistry, but there's more depth and specificity in The Shop Around the Corner, which stars James Stewart and Margaret Sullivan as feuding sales clerks in a Budapest leather goods store, a shop so cozy you can practically smell the rich, earthy leather. Hanks in Mail is lovable, engaging, deeply sympathetic. In short, he's not a heck of a lot more complex than his golden retriever, reads an Entertainment Weekly ode of the film from 1999. Stewart, in Shop, is bitter and hopeful, a jerk and a mensch, scared and serene, all the things a smart, struggling young guy on the cusp of love would be. It goes on to call The Shop one of the most perceptive movies ever made about the workplace, adding, it sees employees as members of a fractious family and acknowledges that each has a story worth telling. The focus on two potential lovers seems a mere happy accident. We can watch The Shop Around the Corner on Amazon Prime to rent. Next, It's a Wonderful Life from 1946. It's a Wonderful Life's dominance as the alpha and omega of holiday classics is sort of funny when you consider how much of it is about shattered dreams, despair, and resignation. But isn't the hope for angelic intervention and a renewed perspective a gift unto itself? Speaking with Entertainment Weekly a few years back, stars like Dolly Parton, Claire Danes, and Mary Steenburgen all cited it as one of their favorite holiday movies. The truth, of course, is that It's a Wonderful Life's story isn't remembered so fondly for its story so much as its cathartic ending, which can't help but make one grateful for whoever they're currently cuddling. It fully embraces both the love and humor and compassion, all the positive elements of Christmas time, film historian Jeremy Arnold told Entertainment Weekly in 2020. But it does not shy away from the darker aspects of the season, so it feels very honest. We can watch It's a Wonderful Life on Amazon Prime. Miracle on 34th Street from 1947. Christmas is that time of year that allows even the most jaded adults to feel like kids again, if only for a moment. The holiday classic that perhaps best encapsulates that sensation is Miracle on 34th Street, George Seton's 1947 film about a Macy's department store Santa who turns out to be none other than Kris Kringle. He's even forced to prove it in a courtroom. To see Santa Claus proven as real, it's a great scene, said an Entertainment Weekly editor in 2016. Everyone wants to see their childhood continue. The film allows us to believe and have a happy ending where, yes, Santa is real and the world is a nice place. We can watch Miracle on 34th Street on Amazon Prime. White Christmas from 1954. VistaVision, a widescreen film format renowned for producing sharp images suited for the big screen, is making a comeback due to recent successes like The Brutalist from 2024 and One Battle After Another that was out this year. The first movie to be filmed in VistaVision? White Christmas, Michael Curtiz's ecstatic musical about a song and dance duo working to save a Vermont lodge with the help of two mellifluous sisters. More than 70 years later, White Christmas still looks gorgeous, positively popping with berry reds, snowy whites, and minty greens. It's as easy on the ears as it is on the eyes. With Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney, and Vera Ellen crooning through the title song, as well as enduring hits like Sisters and Count Your Blessings instead of Sheep. We can watch White Christmas on YouTube to rent. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer for 1964. The stop-motion spectacles of Rankin-Bass are the platonic ideal of Christmas coziness, and no list of holiday musts is complete without Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, one of the earliest creations of the beloved production company. Is it less polished than many of the Christmas specials that followed? A little longer in the tooth? Oh, sure. But for many, it was the first movie to crack open the myth of Santa Claus and build an entire world around his workshop. It helps, too, that it's so peculiar. All those misfit toys, strange cadences, and ramshackle songs lodge themselves in young, impressionable minds in such a way that makes them impossible to forget and enticing to revisit. We can watch Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer on Amazon Prime to buy. The Year Without a Santa Claus from 1974. Like Rudolph, the 1974 special The Year Without a Santa Claus folds new characters into Rankin-Bass's Christmas universe while also telling an entirely new story. This time, Mrs. Claus, played by Shirley Booth, recruits a motley crew of elves and a reindeer to give a grumpy, spurned Santa, played by Mickey Rooney, a break after he becomes disillusioned by the world's lack of love and appreciation. Heat Miser, played by George S. Irving, and Snow Miser, played by Dick Shawn, two of Rankin-Bass's most inspired creations, steal the show with their jaunty song and dance routine, which still hits all these years later. We can watch The Year Without a Santa Claus on Prime Video to rent. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas. That's from 1977. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas is among Jim Henson and Company's most evocative and immersive creations, a heartwarming tale set on tree-lined riverbanks, icy ponds, and wood-paneled shanties, shot with such flair that it's easy to forget you're looking at miniatures. It follows a sweet otter named Emmett, played by Jerry Nelson, and his widowed mother, Alice, played by Mary Sokol, each as fuzzy and huggable as can be. They want to surprise each other with Christmas gifts amid hard times and join a talent show with the hopes of securing a cash prize. Unfortunately, they'll have to square off against the River Bottom Gang's gaggle of weasels, snakes, and muskrats, who somehow manage to still be so dang cute. Themes of community and sacrifice abound, as do bluegrass ditties penned by Paul Williams. We can watch Emmett Otter's jug band Christmas on Amazon Prime. I've never seen that one. A Christmas Story from 1983. You'd be forgiven for being a little sick of A Christmas Story. Bob Clark's beloved tale about 9-year-old Ralphie, played by Peter Billingsley, and the Red Ryder carbine action 200 shot range model air rifle he so fiercely desires. For years, TBS and TNT have made it inescapable with 24-hour marathons beginning on Christmas Eve. Give it a break for a year or two, though, and you'll return to find it fits just as snug as it used to. Its tale of Midwestern holiday mishaps laying over your shoulders like that threadbare sweater you can't bear to thrift. One of the best things about A Christmas Story, Entertainment Weekly previously observed, has always been its lack of holly-strewn sentiment. The light that shines brightest in it is not the standard glow of lovingly strung Christmas bulbs, but the wanton plastic leg lamp wrapped in fishnet and saucily topped with a bordello tassel that Ralphie Parker's dad so proudly displays in the family room window. It's amusing how that leg lamp, once so scandalous, has now become as common a Christmas decoration as snow globes and nutcrackers. We can watch A Christmas Story on HBO Max. Metropolitan is from 1990. You won't find Santa, Rudolph, or the Grinch in Metropolitan, the directorial debut of refined filmmaker Whit Stillman. Christmas lingers in the periphery of this identity comedy, which centers on the relationships, banter, and after-hours arguments of upper-crust New Yorkers on vacation from college during the holiday. Much of this lovely cerebral film unfolds in cozy Manhattan high-rise, a Christmas tree twinkling in the background as snow falls outside. One memorable scene takes us to a sumptuous mass on Christmas Eve, "Come All Ye Faithful," filling the vast cathedral. Traditional holiday themes of generosity, salvation, and tradition are mostly absent here. Rather, Metropolitan evokes the youthful experience of being home, avoiding family, and clinging to friends during the holiday break, when responsibility remains over the horizon and your whole life is still ahead of you. We can watch Metropolitan on HBO Max. Mrs. Santa Claus is from 1996. Angela Lansbury stars in 1996's Mrs. Santa Claus, a mostly forgotten gem that first aired on CBS in 1996. A story of female independence, it finds Lansbury's titular wife mapping out a new, more efficient route for Santa, played by Charles Durning, who played the gift giver 5 times in his career. To test the route, she leaves the North Pole only to be waylaid by a storm in the Lower East Side of Manhattan in 1910. There, Mrs. Claus becomes involved in the women's suffragette movement, helping to organize a strike demanding labor reforms and help some locals find love. The legendary Jerry Herman from Hello, Dolly! And Mame composed the whimsical score, which exudes Christmas cheer across the film's many song and dance numbers, many of which unfold in the snow-crusted thoroughfares of its charmingly vintage vision of New York City. We can watch Mrs. Santa Claus on Tubi. One Special Night from 1999. There's no shortage of snowed-in romances out there, but you might have missed Roger Young's made-for-TV romance One Special Night. Julie Andrews and James Garner, whose screen history dates back to the 1960s, Star is widowers who spark a late-in-life connection while trapped in an abandoned cabin during a winter storm. It's a familiar premise that's elevated by the chemistry of its leads. You may know where it's all heading, but that doesn't blunt the impact of its climactic moment, which unfolds on Christmas Day. Andrews and Garner deftly convey years of love and loss, as well as the difficulties and rewards of moving on. We can watch One Special Night on Tubi. Polar Express 2004. This one's for the Zoomers, as the uncanny motion capture animation of Robert Zemeckis' The Polar Express creeped out many older audience members. But kids love this movie, and even if it creeps you out, it nevertheless remains an intricate, exploratory, indefinably askew interpretation, as articulated by Entertainment Weekly back in 2007. Set on Christmas Eve, this adaptation of Chris Van Allsburg's beloved 1985 children's book follows a young boy whose waning belief in Santa Claus is reinvigorated after hopping on a magical train to the North Pole. It's bursting with warmth and wonder. There's even a song about hot chocolate. And Tom Hanks, a repository of good vibes, plays no less than 5 different roles, including Santa Claus. We can watch The Polar Express on HBO Max. Christmas Again from 2014. The tragically underseen Christmas Again, written and directed by Charles Pakel, is a subtle film about Noel, played by Kentucker Audley, a newly single Christmas tree salesman whose brief encounter with Lydia, played by Hannah Gross, brings a spark of magic into the lives of these troubled souls. It's a simple story about small joys, like slotting holly into a wreath or how a Christmas tree can light up a child's eyes. We can stream Christmas Again on Cineverse. Our next to the last film is The Holdovers from 2023. Everyone's a little sad in The Holdovers, Alexander Payne's charmingly sour comedy about a student stuck at his New England boarding school over the holidays with only his grouchy professor, played by Paul Giamatti, and the school cook, played by Divine Joy Randolph, for company. And that's appropriate. Coziness and sorrow are not mutually exclusive. The film's 3 lost souls all need someone, and as their secrets trickle out, they become the ragtag family they so desperately crave, even if only for a little while, reads Entertainment Weekly's review. The holidays are inherently melancholy for so many, the season's emphasis on togetherness simultaneously highlighting our most painful losses. It is through this bittersweet relationship with the season that these characters connect. We can watch The Holdovers on Amazon Prime to rent. And the last item on our list, Christmas Eve in Miller's Point from 2024. The exhilarating Christmas Eve in Miller's Point wastes no time in assembling its massive cast of mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, cousins, in-laws, and pet lizards. An ensemble piece in the truest sense, Tyler Taormina's film captures the joys and exhaustions of holiday gatherings via a Long Island family's annual Christmas Eve shindig. There are a few through lines here, an ailing grandma and a bit of teenage rebellion, but the film feels most alive when Taormina shakes up the little snow globe he's populated and lets his characters bounce off each other. Come for the holly-strewn chaos, but stay for Michael Cera and Greg Turkington's amusing turns as a pair of straight-faced cops. We can watch Christmas Eve in Miller's Point on AMC+. So there's their list of the 15 coziest Christmas movies to stream this holiday season and where to watch them. It was by Randall Colburn. This time of year, movies sometimes are talked about as having Oscar buzz, and Entertainment Weekly's already starting to predict who is going to receive a nomination. Here are 2026 Oscar predictions. Who will be nominated at the 98th Academy Awards? This is by Joey Nolfi. Awards season sometimes feels like, well, one battle after another when it comes to gauging top contenders in the race. This year, however, major players in the hunt for Oscars have sprung up in pole position at a remarkably early stage, with long overdue 11-time nominee Paul Thomas Anderson's latest widely expected to put an end to his lengthy losing streak at the Academy Awards. But as last year's Best Actress race between longtime frontrunner Demi Moore and eventual winner Mikey Madison proved, the Oscars race is a fluid, ever-changing entity with more plot twists than Yorgos Lanthimos' Begonia. When it comes to gauging who will be nominated at the 2026 Oscars, Entertainment Weekly's awards expertise has you covered with a full set of Oscar predictions in each of the major categories from Best Picture to the acting races. As this year's contest rages on, find out who we think will be nominated in Entertainment Weekly's 2026 Oscar predictions here, updating as often as the race changes in the weeks ahead. For Best Picture, call it a boring Best Picture race if you must, but the industry is, and will continue to be, endlessly enamored by Anderson's latest. If momentum holds for the legendary filmmaker's timely thriller, we're looking at a monolithic contender that could end up as the most winning Best Picture victor in recent memory. Enthusiasm for one battle after another appears to be strongest with actors, directors, and producers, meaning it could stack its way to a Best Picture victory by appealing to the most influential branches in the Academy. Starting with the actors, Battle has, in theory, around six major stars who could find a path into the acting categories, with Regina Hall and Benicio del Toro obviously being the most vulnerable. However, the hold it currently seems to have is in the Best Actor for Leonardo DiCaprio, Best Actress, Chase Infinity, and Best Supporting Actress, Tiana Taylor categories. It's a testament to the film's emotional core, which will drive support in the long run. Not far behind it, though, is Chloe Zhao's Hamnet, the director's prestige follow-up, sorry, Eternals, to Nomadland. It's already generated significant buzz thanks to Jesse Buckley's lead performance, Paul Mescal's turn as a supporting actor, and the film's historic dressings. It will build support across technical categories, too. Sentimental value, and It Was Just an Accident, will additionally continue the recent Cannes-initiated trend of highbrow global dramas hitting big with the Academy's increasingly international votership. Cold War, Parasite, Another Round, Triangle of Sadness, Anatomy of a Fall, etc. While Sinners occupies a key spot as a runaway box office smash, with star power, critical support, and commercial success bolstering its solid place in the 2026 race. The remaining slots feel open to some degree, with Timothée Chalamet's Marty Supreme, Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, and Begonia jockeying for slots as well. We see Begonia dropping on some prediction lists. Discounting a Lanthimos Emma Stone can be risky, while Wicked for Good also feels like a solid choice to round out the category 1 year after its predecessor stormed the nominations list, as does the late-breaking period musical, The Testament of Anne Lee. Here's their current list for who they think will be nominated. One Battle After Another, Hamnet, Sentimental Value, Sinners, It Was Just an Accident, Marty Supreme, Frankenstein, Wicked for Good, Wake Up, Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, and The Testament of Anne Lee. They say, in the hunt, Begonia, Train Dreams, J. Kelly, Is This Thing On?, F1, Avatar, Fire and Ash, and The Secret Agent. For Best Director, it's hard to believe that Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, There Will Be Blood, and The Master, Helmer, has never won an Oscar. But his 11 career nominations stand as a testament to his enduring popularity. Though he's Oscarless, Paul Thomas Anderson has won Best Director at Cannes, The Silver Lion in Venice, The Golden Bear in Berlin, meaning his reach is, at this point, far and wide in every corner of the globe. He aims to finally cement that affection for his work with America's foremost film award, and all signs point to his most recent work steamrolling the competition. While one battle after another has, at this point, seemingly won the campaign war for Best Picture, Best Director feels more vulnerable. Jafar Panahi has earned similarly passionate praise for It Was Just an Accident out of Cannes, while Ryan Coogler could court votes for helming an original story to massive commercial success at the global box office with Sinners. So the list is Paul Thomas Anderson with One Battle After Another, Jafar Panahi with It Was Just an Accident, Chloe Chow with Hamnet, Ryan Coogler with Sinners, and Joachim Trier for Sentimental Value. In the hunt are the directors for Begonia, Marty Supreme, Frankenstein, Wake Up Dead Man, A Knives Out Mystery, Wicked for Good, and A House of Dynamite. Best Actor. Let's get this out of the way now. We're not using Killers of the Flower Moon to gauge DiCaprio's standing in the current Best Actor race. While he missed out on a nod for Martin Scorsese's three-hour 2023 drama, it was a crowded year with far less assured chances. His performance, along with those of Infinity and Taylor, are the pumping heart of One Battle After Another, and he's positioned at the head of a middling race with an uncertain roster at this stage. Marty Supreme's Chalamet also feels safely squared away here, once again as Hollywood's reigning golden boy, though the remaining three slots appear to be wide open for contenders like Wagner Moura for The Secret Agent and Sinners, Michael B. Jordan playing dual roles, mind you, to swoop in. While J. Kelly's George Clooney and Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere's Jeremy Allen White could sneak in as they star in projects revolving around elements of the entertainment industry, which the Oscars tend to love, especially when they're about men, it's Dwayne Johnson's performance in The Smashing Machine that we have our eye on for the long run. While the Mark Kerr biopic didn't smash the box office, Johnson still underwent a bit of a transformation for the role, and it marks one of his most dramatic roles to date. And given his long-standing likability and box office might in the industry, his fellow actors might feel inclined to lift up one of the last remaining movie stars of a dying breed of Hollywood actors. So their list has Leonardo DiCaprio, Timothée Chalamet, Wagner Moura, Michael B. Jordan, and Dwayne Johnson. And in the hunt, they still have Joel Edgerton, George Clooney, Ethan Hawke, Jeremy Allen White, Jesse Plemons, Vahid Mabasari, Matthew McConaughey, and Daniel Day-Lewis. For Best Actress, just like last year, Best Actress is shaping up to be another two-woman race throughout the remainder of the season. For now, Hamnet's Buckley is out front with her emotionally charged performance in Chow's drama, earning the best reviews of the actress's career. On paper, she's got a buzzy trail ahead of her, too, with her heavily anticipated reunion with lost daughter Helmer, Maggie Gyllenhaal. That's for the bonkers-looking The Bride, set to drop March 6th, with a press cycle likely coinciding with Buckley's Oscar bid. Renee Rintsev is hot on her trail, though, and will surely court international voters after she burst onto the scene with her standout performance in the phenomenal Worst Person in the World, also directed by Sentimental Values Trier. Regardless of how its box office numbers fare in comparison to the 2024 edition, Wicked for Good will again boost Cynthia Erivo into the Best Actress crowd, with her performance set to be a towering end to the two-part musical opus. Infinity also feels like the ingenue of the year, much the way Madison ended the race last year. While it's unwise to discount Stone's unrelenting power in the Oscars race, especially in a film like Begonia, her re-teaming with Lanthimos after they found success with The Favorite and Poor Things. The trick will be getting awards voters to sit through the admittedly oddball film. If they do, however, consider Stone a contender. So the names on the list here are Jesse Buckley, Renee Rintsev, Cynthia Erivo, Chase Infinity, and Emma Stone. In the hunt, Rose Byrne, Amanda Seyfried, Jennifer Lawrence, and Kate Hudson. For Best Supporting Actor, Sean Penn kicked up the intensity with his work in one battle after another, and the audiences took note. His bold role as a military officer might rub some the wrong way on character alone, but there's no denying how the industry will receive such a brash performance. Supporting contenders often succeed with more in-your-face work. Just look at last year's Best Supporting Actress winner Zoe Saldana for Emilia Perez. And Penn's transformative work here could lead to his first victory in 16 years. Stellan Skarsgård also feels like a safe choice, given his well-received turn in Sentimental Value, as does Mescal for his hefty supporting turn in Hamnet. The remaining slots are a toss-up in an open field, with the increasingly powerful profile of Challengers actor Josh O'Connor bolstering his bid for Wake Up, Dead Man, which contains arguably his best work to date. Del Toro could go along for the ride with Battle, as could youngster Jacoby Jupe from Hamnet and Sinners' Delroy Lindo, but it's Jacob Elordi's work in Frankenstein that, while technically not the best of any of the aforementioned names, is physically transformative enough to catch voters' attention. So their list so far is Sean Penn, Stellan Skarsgård, Paul Mescal, Benicio Del Toro, and Jacob Elordi. And in the hunt is Josh O'Connor, Adam Sandler, Delroy Lindo, Jacoby Jupe, Dylan O'Brien, and William H. Macy. And for Best Supporting Actress, Amy Madigan came locked and loaded into the Best Supporting Actress race with Weapons, registering as a runaway hit with a cultural impact strong enough to catapult her into the Oscars contest. Whether she'll maintain throughout the season remains to be seen. She'll need strong, sustained support from both critics groups and precursor bodies to stay afloat, as her work in the film is memorable but not as showy as one might expect upon first glance. She's got the element of wild transformation on her side, but the performance lacks the kind of prestige appeal necessary to win over the snootier international voting body of the acting branch. And while not outright horror in nature, many might dismiss the film as simply a genre picture in general and refuse to watch it in the first place. That said, there's still a chance she could sneak in, but this category is packed with potential players who also appear in this year's likely Best Picture contenders. That kind of weight will help recognizable names like prior winner Gwyneth Paltrow from Marty Supreme and Elle Fanning from Sentimental Value succeed on early ballots. Support for Sinners is also likely to be strong in the coming weeks, with Wunmi Mosaku's incredible performance in the film ultimately strong enough and her part meaty enough to overcome the same kind of genre bias that might hold someone like Madigan back. But at this phase, the race seems to be Taylor's to lose, with another high-profile performance streaming in Ryan Murphy's All's Fair during key voting periods. Taylor's face and acting prowess will be hard to ignore this year, especially in such a strong Best Picture contender like One Battle After Another. So their list so far is Teyana Taylor, Gwyneth Paltrow, Elle Fanning, Ariana Grande, and Wunmi Mosaku. And in the hunt, Amy Madigan, Glenn Close, Regina Hall, and Emily Blunt. Those are the 2026 Oscar predictions, who will be nominated at the 98th Academy Awards. And that was by Joey Nolfi. I am late for our break in the show to say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com. Also in my Oscar theme here is a list that's ranking the 30 most memorable actor-winning performances in Oscar history. Because I'm late for the break, I don't know that I'm going to get through all 30, but let's see how we do. I might do a bit of editing here. The Academy Award for Best Actor is the pinnacle for any male actor, an honor bestowed every year since 1929 when Emil Jannings won for his performances in The Last Command and The Way of All Flesh. With the Oscars approaching its landmark 100th anniversary in a few years, we're looking back on some of the best winners in the category's history to mark when the Academy truly got it right. There are many factors we considered for this list, starting with, of course, the quality of the performances themselves and how thoroughly they embody their characters, whether through transformation or their own natural movie star charisma. But these performances don't exist in a vacuum, so we're also thinking about those that linger in popular culture, even years or decades later, and wins that marked significant moments in Hollywood. With that said, it's time to open the envelope and reveal our highly subjective ranking of the top 30 greatest Best Actor winners in Oscar history. First on the list is Eddie Redmayne for The Theory of Everything in 2014. Eddie Redmayne is not the first actor to win an Oscar for playing a man with a physical or mental disability. However, his capacity to transform physically yet never lose the beautiful mind and mischievous spirit of genius Stephen Hawking, living with the paralyzing effects of ALS, is what's supremely remarkable about his performance. His facial contortions and cramped muscles increasingly incrementally as his condition worsens are essential and punishing elements of the performance. But Redmayne doesn't rely on them as a crutch. He scopes the light and darkness within, the hope and the fear that lives in all of us. James Cagney is next for Yankee Doodle Dandy from 1942. By the early 40s, James Cagney had found a niche playing tough guys, so much so that he practically invented the hot-headed archetype. But Cagney had roots in song and dance, and it was his 1942 performance in Yankee Doodle Dandy that unleashed his many talents. The musical about George M. Cohan let Cagney sing, tap dance, and charm his way across the composer's life. The role won Cagney, then 43, his only Oscar, and was often cited as the star's favorite, and it's easy to see why. A more energetic and enjoyable Best Actor performance would be hard to fathom. More than 80 years later, the movie still puts a skip in your step. Jamie Foxx for Ray in 2004. Few could have predicted that stand-up comedian-turned-actor Jamie Foxx would have portrayed Ray Charles with such remarkable depth. Foxx, whose extensive auditions for the role included a piano session with Charles himself, brought vivacity to an otherwise standard biopic chronicling the singer's tumultuous life. The actor mastered Charles' verbal and physical mannerisms and played the piano and lip-synced with a fervor few actors have ever mustered. Charismatic and complex, Fox's portrait of a beloved but deeply flawed man set a new standard for music biopics. Ben Kingsley for Gandhi in 1982. How does one play a saint or a deity or a man treated as one? That was the challenge for Ben Kingsley in this great man epic about Mahatma Gandhi, the martyred Indian independence leader who preached nonviolent disobedience against British oppression. Oh, and throw in that the film spans 55 years, beginning with Gandhi's days as an angry young lawyer being tossed off a South African train. Humble but strong, philosophical but pragmatic, Kingsley's interpretation of the leader manages to balance both his spirituality and shrewdness, simultaneously demystifying an icon while also adding another layer to the legend. Michael Douglas in Wall Street from 1987. Gordon Gekko is a cunning and unscrupulous corporate predator who crystallized the Reagan-era ethos into three words. With the slicked back hair and a smile that doesn't quite reach his eyes, Michael Douglas intimidated and seduced, delivering a portrayal that not only influenced other actors' subsequent takes on bullying high rollers, see The Wolf of Wall Street, but trickled down to the actual street drones who still quote Gekko's credo like it's gospel. Greed is good. And Douglas's performance is even better. Denzel Washington in Training Day from 2001. Denzel Washington was already an Oscar winner and one of Hollywood's biggest stars when he seized with both hands the role of ferocious L.A. cop Alonzo Harris. Tasked with breaking in Ethan Hawke's naive rookie, Alonzo is the devil barely in disguise, a self-described wolf who is the unchallenged alpha of his turf. It's a huge, colorful, over-the-top role, one that Washington never shrinks from, yet it's a testament to Washington's on-screen powers, his charm, energy, sex appeal, and rage, that Alonzo is so seductive and beguiling, and yes, King Kong ain't got S on him. Laurence Olivier in Hamlet from 1948. Thousands of actors have tackled the Bard's most tragic and ambivalent hero, but Laurence Olivier's eerie atmospheric adaptation, the first major non-silent version, makes the 400-year-old Prince of Denmark seem devastatingly real. The Shakespearean actor had famously played Hamlet on stage at the Old Vic in London, and his magnetic, cinematic incarnation would come to personify the character, and in fact, Shakespeare, for a generation of filmgoers. Of course, purists will quibble that his stage Hamlet was better, but Olivier's mastery of the material allowed him to get inside the prince's slowly deteriorating mind. Gene Hackman in The French Connection from 1971. The right role at the right time can open all the locked career doors for an actor, and for Gene Hackman, that role was Popeye Doyle, the bad news New York narcotics detective with the pork pie hat obsessed with smashing a heroin ring. Bigoted and vicious, with a bite to match his bark, Doyle was a new kind of cop, beating Dirty Harry to movie screens by two buns, and Hackman completely inhabited the character so that he felt as real as the film's verite surroundings. Dirty Harry was an agenda-driven caricature. Popeye Doyle lived and breathed. Clint Eastwood and Hackman united decades later for 1992's Unforgiven, and Hackman won another Oscar for playing Little Bill, the black hat sheriff infused with Popeye DNA. Tom Hanks in Philadelphia, 1993. At a time in Hollywood when actors playing queer characters was considered risky, Tom Hanks used his star power to help mainstream America empathize with the plight of gay men facing the AIDS crisis. In this poignant courtroom drama, Hanks plays Andrew Beckett, an attorney who is fired from his law firm upon discovering his sexuality and his AIDS diagnosis. As Andrew hires a lawyer, played by Denzel Washington, to sue his former employer for discrimination, Hanks movingly portrays a man fighting for his life in a society that fears and loathes him. Inarguably, his best scene is when Andrew loses himself in the transcendent beauty of an operatic aria, and, like his lawyer, we come to understand the full breadth of his humanity. Sean Penn in Milk from 2008. Sometimes an actor and a role are made for each other. Sean Penn, on the other hand, wasn't necessarily born to play Harvey Milk, the out gay San Francisco politician who was assassinated in 1978 while fighting for equal rights. Somehow, though, the passionate, extroverted character triggered something deep inside Penn. His Milk is occasionally awkward, incredibly warm, and fearlessly energetic. It's a role worlds apart from Mystic River Penn and Dead Man Walking Penn, proving the actor's awesome prowess that delivers a beautifully refined performance in the process. Jeremy Irons in Reversal of Fortune. The most fascinating aspect of Jeremy Irons' performance as Klaus von Bülow, an aloof aristocrat accused of trying to murder his heiress wife, is that he manages to evoke more than grim fascination for a character described in one scene as a prince of perversion. Acting on a knife's edge but never slipping into caricature, Irons elicits genuine empathy by portraying a man whose mannered air barely masks his fear of an uncertain future. The film, based on a true story that became a media sensation in the 80s, never renders a definitive judgment on von Bülow, who was acquitted in court, leaving him an indelible enigma that Irons teases but never tells. F. Murray Abraham from Amadeus in 1984. It's tempting to say that Milos Forman's Amadeus is an exquisite prestige drama about the life of Mozart, but that's a bit like saying Moby Dick is a book about fishing. What it really is a movie about the morally destructive nature of envy, as the composer Salieri, played by F. Murray Abraham, seethes with a wannabe's ambition that's frustrated at every turn by his rival's seemingly tossed-off brilliance. You can see his jealousy devouring him from the inside like cancer. Tom Hulce is daffy and delicious as the airheaded prodigy Mozart, but few of us can identify with that kind of genius. Salieri, on the other hand, is someone we can see in ourselves, albeit our worst selves. Every repeat viewing of Abraham's performance reveals some new moment of humiliation, some fresh, sickening glimmer of anguish that feels all too familiar. Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer from 2023. Best actor is often given to overtly showy performances and big transformations. As J. Robert Oppenheimer, the theoretical physicist who was instrumental in the development of the atomic bomb, Cillian Murphy refreshingly eschews such theatrics in favor of deeply internalized work that shows the many complexities of his title character's mind. Murphy's performance is a study of contrasts, playing a logic-minded man who is nonetheless haunted by his actions. Rarely has an actor's eyes been put to such good use, as Murphy's thousand-yard stare complicates guilt, regret, and anxious anticipation of how his life's work will impact the world for generations to come. Anthony Hopkins in The Silence of the Lambs from 1991. Have the years diminished Anthony Hopkins' star turn as Hannibal the Cannibal? Maybe. Hopkins returned to the part twice, gleefully unrestrained in Hannibal 2001, and altogether too restrained in Red Dragon in 2002. Also not helping matters, every fictional serial killer and practically every fictional psychopath post-Silence of the Lambs owes some debt to Hopkins' radical performance. Rye, polite, delicate, and demonic. Hopkins's Hannibal appears in shockingly few scenes, but every millisecond of screen time is tattooed in scar tissue on pop culture. There's not an unmemorable line reading, not one physical moment wasted. Demme, the director, often shoots Hopkins straight on, making for an unusually intimate performance. His Lecter stares straight into our eyes, and we, horrified, can't help but stare back. Clark Gable and It Happened One Night. Frank Capra's screwball comedy was the first film in Oscar history to sweep the five major Academy Awards, Best Picture, Director, Actor, Actress, and Screenplay. And Claudette Colbert and Clark Gable's verbal sparring set the tone for every quick-witted romantic comedy that followed. As Peter Warren, a savvy reporter and the original rom-com cad, Gable helped establish a template that every leading man from Cary Grant to George Clooney would follow. Witty, tender, and, of course, charming, whether he's explaining how to properly undress or fruitlessly trying to hail a ride. Legend has it that when Gable stripped off his shirt in the film and the audiences saw him bare underneath, undershirt sales plummeted. Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant from 2015. After decades of great work and multiple awards losses, Leonardo DiCaprio won an overdue Oscar in 2016. All he had to do was trudge through the South Dakota wilderness, get mauled by a CGI bear, and survive an unspeakably frigid environment. All kidding aside, it's apparent when watching DiCaprio in The Revenant that he takes his craft very seriously, and he burrows deep within his character, Hugh Glass, a man grieving the murder of his wife and hell-bent on revenge upon being left behind by his hunting team. It's one of the most physically demanding performances ever to win Best Actor, and by the end of the film, you feel like you went through it right alongside him. Philip Seymour Hoffman is from Capote in 2005. Philip Seymour Hoffman looked and sounded nothing like Truman Capote, but he understood the famous writer deeply since both men were at similar pivotal points in their careers, accomplished artists who hungered for greatness. For Capote, it was In Cold Blood, the nonfiction novel that changed American literature. For Hoffman, it was Truman, a conflicted outsider no matter if he was in New York or Kansas. The actor slimmed down and heightened his voice for the part, but he never needed to aim for an exact physical impression. Ambition, obsession, and a convenient humanity were enough, and Hoffman etched those turbulent emotions in every frame. Gregory Peck in To Kill a Mockingbird from 1962. Forget about orphaned aliens saving mankind or dark knights with cool gadgets. Atticus Finch may very well be the greatest hero ever depicted on screen. Gregory Peck, tall and broad-shouldered in cream suits and tortoiseshell glasses, effortlessly embodied Atticus's quiet dignity and noble ideals, a moral compass defending a black man framed for rape in the Depression-era South, while quietly teaching his motherless children about tolerance and the ugliness of bigotry and ignorance. Has there ever been a better marriage of character and actor? When Scout, played by Mary Badham, is urged to stand up with the rest of the courtroom gallery, "Your father's passing," you'll want to salute him as well. Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood. That's from 2007. Either the scariest or funniest performance of the 2000s, Daniel Day-Lewis is Daniel Plainview at his most scenery-gnashing. Actor-director John Huston was a key reference point for Plainview's oft-imitated diction, but the only obvious comparisons are literary. There's an Ahab quality to Plainview's all-consuming hunt for the Earth's treasures, an obsession that begins in the prologue when he drags himself out of a mine and crawls on a broken leg to a claims office, and that reaches its glorious epiphany in the film's epilogue. Only Day-Lewis could transform this material into meme fodder. 1,000 I drink your milkshake imitations followed, but then only Day-Lewis could have also made such a potentially cartoonish character feel so devastatingly real. Daniel Plainview is only human despite his best efforts. This is number 11. It's Peter Finch in Network from 1976. I'm mad as hell, soaking wet news anchor Howard Beale screams live on air in his trench coat, and I'm not going to take this anymore. The moment has been so baked into America's cultural cake that Tea Party Republicans parrot the phrase, not realizing that the film is a satire of sheep mentality and the man who authored it, that's screenwriter Paddy Chayefsky, was a political lefty. Much of Peter Finch's raging wildfire of a performance is delivered in extended monologues, but the nuanced Australian actor portrays the man's brokenness even during his horsepower speeches. Beale's death is ironic, but Finch's was no joke. He died of a heart attack at age 60 while promoting Network, and 2 months later his widow accepted the Oscar's first posthumous acting award. I'm stopping with the top 10. I wasn't able to edit this because it was so succinctly written. This has been ranking the 30 most memorable Best Actor-winning performances in Oscar history. That leaves us with 10 more, and I will read those next week. How's that for a teaser and a temptation for coming back next week? The article has been ranking the 30 most memorable Best Actor-winning performances in Oscar history, and it was by Kevin Jacobson. And yes, please come back next week to hear what the top 10 are. For now, it's time to leave, and I need to remind everybody that you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This has been Entertainment Weekly, and I've been reading from their website, which is EW.com. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury, and thanks for listening this week. Until next time, goodbye.